Yes, that's right.
It's no wastage, there's no contention. So it's just a matter of deciding how much to partition each thing,
mm-hmm.
how much of the partition to give to each workload, and then go with it.
Right.
And then essentially you have to figure out when to adjust these things and what effect these adjustments have.
Right.
So there it seems somewhat cleaner, simpler, maybe. But really, you need to understand the non-partition case in order to even get to partition, because you don't know otherwise how to provide the partitions or mm-hmm. which one to provide more or less.
Not necessarily,
because this wastage and contention don't show up.
Yeah, don't
so it's
don't
not,
show up on the other
not
side.
Totally clear.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think of non-partitioned as being somewhat more fundamental, because that's what happens in regular caches, or at least
right.
the lower levels of the memory hierarchy.
Yeah, regular caches are not partitioned by default.
So in the non-partitioned case, the wastage and contention are critical, and so that needs to be understood somehow. Now, if some page gets kicked out, it may be because of some other
flooding's
work.
Yeah.
But really, if let's say you're using least recently used or least frequently used, doesn't really matter. If you're in the bottom of the
list
of your list, then you're going to get kicked out regardless of who shows up at the top.
Right. It could be yourself.
So wastage is not, although it is somewhat due to other people, it's just because you're in the bottom of the stack, and not because somebody really targeted you for this.
Right. The main issue with wastage is because the replacement algorithm doesn't know the future.
Correct.
It guesses that certain blocks are more important than others.
Right.
And that may lead to a wrong decision.
No, so that's not what I'm getting at. The way wastage we've been thinking about was that one workload somehow hurts the other, right? And we've been thinking about this in this pairwise or setwise fashion, where we are saying that because of another guy, this guy is getting hurt.
Yes.
But really, it may be because of the cache replacement scheme rather.
It's mainly a consequence of the replacement algorithm.
Yeah.
And there could be a self-wastage effect that is similar to pairwise wastage effect that could be modeled.
Yeah. And that self-wastage actually happens in the partition case, where you only have a fixed partition and you are hurting yourself, so to speak.
That's true. That is true.
So maybe you can kind of ignore that here and assume that only others are hurting you.
Self-wastage could also be a significant concern. It could be a significant problem depending on the replacement algorithm or the metric that the replacement algorithm uses.
Right.
Hmm. Yeah.
So there I was, I am curious to know if the other cache replacement algorithms still have the same effect on wastage.
Ricardo showed the data with LFU.
He claimed for LFU and LRU, and I believe that seems very reasonable. But ARC is a much very different beast, and has this. It sort of divides the world between things you've accessed twice and things you've accessed only once.
Right. He had this algorithm that he used, which I'm trying to recollect exactly how that was defined. He kind of characterized it as LFU with a little bit of LRU in it, or vice versa.
Right, so that's what ARC is, yeah.
Correct. But it was more of LFQ or LFU with aging or something like that, is what he was talking about.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see, because I don't think he actually ran the...
He had wastage for that as well. He had wastage for that version as well. Mm-hmm. It's not ARC, but it's has some similar properties.
Yeah.
That's in the paper. Or in his thesis.
I mean, after going through all of this thinking, I now understand why you were saying cache replacement is a little far away, and you don't really want to touch this unless it's necessary. although it does play a role here, and one can, we can work on it, it doesn't hurt, but it's harder to experiment with it and actually implement it or have an impact on it.
Well, the thing is, I don't know where to start. If I want to design a cache replacement algorithm that minimizes wastage, I really don't have any idea. I don't know where to start. I mean, I'm not even sure if that question makes sense. That the question, which is design a cache replacement algorithm that minimizes wastage, because wastage is a consequence of the replacement algorithm. So.
Right. So that's why these two are connected, and that's why it's a reasonable question to ask.
I guess it's a very useful question to have an answer to, but.
I mean, I'm saying that I understand at least some of the issues, even assuming some standard cache replacement algorithm down there.
Yeah, but I think it's a valuable question to spend time on. It's just that I don't know how to go about, I don't know what is step number two after the problem statement. Where are we going with that?
For instance, just like Ricardo is experimenting with the effect of cache replacement algorithm on wastage, one can say, okay, let me try other schemes over there and see if it makes a difference. It would be a perfectly reasonable set of experiments to do.
Right. The other side of the story, I think, is that you can always construct adversarial workloads that can make any replacement algorithm look bad, worse than all the other replacement algorithm, except for the optimal algorithm.
Right.
The optimal algorithm cannot.
No question there.
You cannot beat that. But any other algorithm that does not look into the future, you can.
Correct. But at least you could say for these kinds of workloads and blah blah blah, this is probably a reasonable way to go at it. Or maybe even a parameterized cache replacement algorithm I guess some of these schemes are adaptive, so maybe it's already there, I'm not sure. This is why I'm kind of curious, because art is supposed to be adaptive. As things change, it's likely to adapt.
Right. I think there are some gaps in terms of just like the more fundamental understanding of the problem itself. I think there is a gap there.
Right. I agree. So I wrote down some points which are probably no different from what you had before, but for me it makes things more clear. Maybe you want to look at this.
Okay.
Contention and wastage, what causes it, how do we model it, what parameters does it depend on, what is the effect of cache replacement policy on these issues.
Yeah, I think those are the primary questions, I agree.
And this is something that is not totally clear to me anymore. That wastage itself, it seems that it's only one direction. It doesn't matter what it is that's causing the wastage almost. If it's an LRU policy and if you're the least recently used, you're going to get kicked out. And so if that page causes wastage, then it's going to happen. And so the effect is not pairwise, or it's not because of this guy, it's just because you're at the bottom of the pipe and you didn't use this page fast enough.
That's true.
I don't know. So that's causing me some trouble, because now I don't know how to argue Ricardo's model of sort of pairwise effects. Right? Surely you can count how many pages for this workload got kicked out because of this guy, and that's doable.
That's a pair-wise effect.
Value that you can measure, and you've got this information. So that pairwise effect is there. And if most of these happen because of that one workload, what does that mean? So those are the questions to ask, right?
Right. Well, yeah, the first question is, well, how to model wastage as a quantity based on...
Overall, you mean?
Yeah, overall, mm-hmm. Yeah, wastage that that a certain workload incurs because of a set of other co-located workloads.
Right.
Right. And that's the, if you have a... So there is a certain amount of wasted cache space,
right,
because of each workload.
So yeah, so that's why I'm saying that the effect, the wastage on this particular workload, it probably doesn't matter whether there are 20 other workloads that are causing it or there's just one big workload that's causing it. So I can look at it's just the rest of the world that's hurting me.
Correct.
And maybe, as you said, there's some self-hurting also, but that's to be.
Right.
Well, actually, so another thing that I was thinking about was that one always assumes that if you're given enough for that, so your miss ratio curve goes something like this. When it flattens out, if you provide this much space, then in the partition case, that's your ideal thing, and you should not have any worries after this point.
Right.
Right. So for partition case, this is how much you want to give to any process, and as long as you can monitor this, you're golden there,
mm-hmm.
Right? So in the non-partition case, you would like to be here, but...
non-partition case, you had a provision this plus the wastage.
Plus the wastage, and that wastage is caused because this is not fixed for you.
No, that is fixed.
Well, it's not, because it's non-partitioned. You don't have control over it.
I know, but...
If the process goes faster, you don't have control over this.
This miss rate curve is independent of how many co-located workloads you have.
Correct. This curve doesn't change, but you can't be guaranteed to stay here.
Stay here in which way?
So this is amount of storage, amount of cache allocated,
right,
to this process.
Yeah.
And if you stay at this point, if you allocate this much space in the cache for this workload, you're going to be in good shape,
mm-hmm,
because that's the best,
right,
miss rate that you can achieve.
Mm-hmm.
In the partition case, I can ensure this.
Mm-hmm.
But in the non-partition case,
you cannot.
I cannot because I don't have control over it.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's where the problem is.
Right, exactly. So if you have a non-partition case, then ideally what you should have is like for every workload, you provision the amount of cache it would need,
plus some
additional amount of,
mm-hmm,
space that accommodates for all the,
yeah,
all the working set that is being kicked out due to other workloads otherwise,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Right. So
in the non-partition case, the cache requirement is the sum of all the working sets plus sum of all the pairwise wastage effects.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's that pairwise that bothers me. So
bothers me too. We need to figure out what we need to do with that.
I don't know what to do with that. I think we should just go with it because we have some experimental evidence for it. Other than that, I'm not sold on it. I don't see us coming up with a new model and then doing some experiments for it at this stage.
It's not a paper. So at this point, you know, we can say here is what we found, but here's a conjecture. Here is what, we are going to work on.
What seems like a more reasonable model.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. So there's room for some thought over there.
Yeah.
Then the next thing I have is sort of interaction with the cache hierarchy.
Mm.
This we should probably go at it a little bit later, but essentially it says what is the effect of a hit or a miss,
mm,
on the performance at adjacent levels of the cache hierarchy.
Right.
And once you have the model, maybe this will make a little more sense. And then
I remember we had sort of some discussion
some
about
this
with the
reuse
rate
I
and the flood rate and
correct.
Things like that.
Yeah, right. And so maybe something could be, I could flesh that out a little bit more. Again, you know, my what has been really hard is to nail down a simple problem, cleanly formulated algorithmic problem has not been easy at all. And then
it's all online. That's another.
Online
and it's
is not the problem. Online is just a characteristic of the input. Even if I assume that, even if I ignore the non-online case, I should still be able to formulate the problem. And
so, at a high level, I'm not sure what is the sort of the detail or the level at which you're trying to formulate this problem. But at a high level, what we want is there are certain questions that we would like to address. One is the if you have a partitionable cache, then how do you partition? When do you partition? How often do you partition? That's a high-level question, right? It's not a theoretical question, maybe, but it could be. The other question is, okay, if you have a non-partitionable cache, then how much cache resources do you provision to accommodate all the workloads and their wastage?
But any algorithmic problem that you formulate, you have to have two things. One is when input is somewhat clear. What are the constraints and what are your objectives? Constraints, of course, is that you have this much space. Those are your constraints. You have to work within this space.
Well, one problem is even to just do provisioning, right? How much cache do I need to provision for these set of workloads?
But then for that, you have to have objectives. You have to know what it is that you're optimizing.
Minimize the amount of cache you need to serve these set of workloads.
I would say it should be right here in the miss rate curve.
What do you mean? You mean any algorithm that...
I would say the ideal allocation of space for a workload should be right about here.
But the problem is that you have wastage.
Right. No. So modulo those things. But I'm saying overall you want to be around here. It's not like you want to be around here or you're allowed to...
The problem I'm trying to frame here is that if you have a non-partitionable cache, let's say your cache, you don't have the cache yet, but you know that whatever cache you're going to buy is not going to be non-partitionable.
Yeah.
And you have a set of workloads with certain properties. You know, for instance, the miss rate curve, you know, flood rates and reuse rates and all of that. Then the question is, how do you go about computing the minimum amount of cache that you need to provision for these workloads? Given a replacement algorithm.
Right. I'm assuming that.
That's one question that I'm...
What I'm trying to say is that for that minimum cache, instead of calling it minimum cache, I'm saying that our constraint should be that we want to stay in this part of the miss rate curve.
You mean by provisioning? So right now it's a provisioning problem.
What is the provisioning that will ensure that all the workloads stay in their flat part of the curve?
Yes. Right? Absolutely.
And that's what I...
in the presence of...
That's sort of the loosest formulation I came up with.
Oh, I see. That's the... you mean in terms of goal.
Uh-huh.
The goal is to ensure that... So I put it in other words, which is how much cache do you need to provision to accommodate all the working sets and the wastage?
Right.
And the waste and the total wastage.
Sure, but a practical problem would be you'll say you have this much cache, and
that's another problem. That's a different problem, and that would be a cache mapping problem where you have a given a cache, and given a set of caches, and given a set of workloads, how do you map these workloads to these sets of caches?
Right.
So that the cumulative cumulative wastage is minimized.
Again, what I would like to formulate this as is to say that all of these guys have to stay in this part of the curve.
Right, but one solution could
be... But you're saying allow a lot of wastage in there.
Yeah, I could, you know, provision a large cache and that will ensure that these guys all stay there.
Sure. So I also want to maximize the number of workloads I put there.
Right. So in the so that may be yeah, that may be a third problem. I'm trying to think for the second problem where you have a set of workloads and you have a set of caches. What is the what is a reasonable way
Okay,
to
so you're suggesting, so yeah, these could be alternative formulations. One is to minimize wastage, the other is to maximize the number of workloads. And the third could be some kind of performance measure.
Right.
And I'm not, again, I'm not sure, I'm just going to leave that as sort of vague.
Yeah,
Maybe there is
the
could
performance
be
objective.
number of instructions executed or something like this.
Yeah, you mean throughput, right?
Yeah,
So to
throughput, right.
maximize throughput, that's yeah, that's that may be a third alternative, but I think a more important problem is overall system level goals, which where you have a dynamic problem, that you have a set of workloads and you have for each workload a system, a goal,
Yeah.
a performance goal, and manage the workload to cache mapping dynamically so that the number of violations of that performance goal are minimized, like for each of the workloads, or that may be another formulation.
Sure. So you're
So this
saying
is across the entire hierarchy.
if your agreement allows you to stay with this much misses, you might as well play with this as your constraint rather
Right.
than have
Correct.
to stay over here.
Exactly. And because that allows you to operate at lower cache
But
requirements.
when a workload has misses, it hurts the whole system. It's not just this particular workload that's getting hurt.
True. Yeah. It would hurt the workloads that are located at the next level,
Right.
co-located at the next level, because
Yeah.
this guy is going to generate a lot more requests
Right.
at the next level.
Right. Right.
So that's why I kind of
Okay.
formulated the problem as a cache level finger pointing problem. Right? So if you have a performance
Yeah, once
violation,
sure.
then the first thing you want to do is to figure out, okay, which cache level
Yeah.
is the source of the problem.
No, once I write down some optimization question, then all these variants can are manageable.
Right. Yeah. I'm also kind of interested in getting you to think along the lines of a new replacement algorithm because it seems like you
No, I am
started
going
in that
to.
direction.
I just wasn't sure I wanted to write about it in the proposal, so I definitely want, once Mario finishes these papers, I will have him start from cache replacement algorithms, not from up here, because I really need to understand what these adaptive algorithms, what do they achieve,
Right.
because I think that has a lot of promise. And I don't understand adaptive algorithms well enough just because they are not something that we study
Right.
in the algorithms curriculum. And I have one other suggestion here, which I think is somewhat interesting, and that is to sometimes add some dummy accesses to manipulate the cache replacement schemes. Supposing you're given a cache replacement scheme and you can't change that, and you're working at this higher level, but you want this particular workload to do well. It has some constraints, and it's going slow because of things again that you don't have control over.
Because the workload does not generate those
Does
accesses.
not generate the accesses. So it will get hurt at the lower level because of the cache replacement scheme. But what if I generate dummy accesses so that its pages remain?
Yeah, that sounds like a replacement algorithm to me.
Well,
A
it sounds like
replacement.
manipulating the replacement scheme, really.
You could create a replacement algorithm that fakes accesses.
Right. So
Right?
I thought this could be something we could play with. Hi, Shekhar. Can I call you back in about 10, 15 minutes? Okay. See you then.
Yeah, so Yeah, that sounds like a replacement algorithm to me, right? So let's say a replacement algorithm uses a certain metric, which is
least recently
used.
Yeah. And the bottom of the file is all workloads from this guy that's just slow or doesn't have the access, and there's some other aggressive thing that's messing it up.
Right. So
it's sort of like, you know, go and touch those pages to make sure they don't get replaced.
Or alternatively, you know, something like what Arc does is maintain, when for every new access that comes in, you put it in a different queue, so that it gets kicked out in reference
right.
to existing pages that have been reused before.
Sure.
Right. So it's sort of a similar idea. So
instead of
going and touching those pages artificially, you reduce the weight of first time accesses, and
maybe.
I guess
yeah.
yeah, it's sort of an equivalent effect, I think. So those
maybe, but this way you don't have to really mess with the cache replacement scheme.
But what you're suggesting is to actually change the workload itself so
yeah.
that it,
yeah.
it generates those additional
well,
accesses.
Plug in some dummy accesses, yeah.
That's very challenging because, so workload is any workload is sort of this state machine, right, that goes from one state to the next state.
Yes.
To achieve what it's doing. Changing that state machine would mean changing the application, and basically rewriting the application, which...
I don't want to touch the application, so...
Then you... Okay. What do you do, though? I mean, you could have, like, another process that's independent of all the...
I'm sort of sitting at the level of this cache management algorithm and trying to see how I can live with the cache replacement scheme that's down there, which I don't have control over, and the application that I don't have control over.
Like, inside the operating system.
And I know that I have to service this application with a certain performance guarantee.
For the non-partitionable case.
For the non-partitionable case, yeah.
I see. So counteracting wastage.
In a way, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I know I don't have control over all the aspects. Forget about the cache replacement level, but I'm artificially changing the least recently used page so that this may be. So if there's a lot of wastage on one particular workload, I can help it in this manner.
The problem with that is you're increasing the utilization of the resource,
absolutely.
The system.
Certainly, but it may still be way better than not being able to achieve a certain service level agreement. Which is a better cost? A few extra accesses, or having to get it from the next level of the hierarchy? That's what you have to look at, right? And if every level of the hierarchy adds a factor of 10, 100, 1,000, whatever, you have to decide maybe these dummy accesses can be useful, right?
Contracting wastage by...
Ultimately, there's an application, down here there's a cache management level, and down here is the cache replacement policy, right? So this guy is a piece of software. He can mess around with things that he sends down to the next level, right? At least that's how I understand it.
Yeah, he can. It's very unusual, but it's possible. It's possible, actually. I don't think anyone has thought about this before. Just wondering, what are the downsides?
I don't know enough about this system to...
One of the issues here is for this guy, for the layer in between, to know what to touch.
Yeah,
there
of course.
I mean, keeping an MRC is itself a very big challenge.
I understand.
That's online, right?
Sure.
And the MRC has no information about which elements get accessed.
Correct. Correct.
It only knows what is the miss rate at a certain cache size.
Right, but again, the way I think about this is, I don't even care about all of this. In fact, I don't even care if all of this part is, you don't even give it to me. Tell me where this starts and tell me what this level is.
The problem is that we don't know what are the elements here.
I don't even need to know. This point tells me how much space will ensure that my miss rate is lower bounded.
What is this arrow? What is that arrow?
So the application makes a request.
Right. This guy doesn't see it. This guy won't see it.
But he does some cache management.
He does cache management, but only in terms of, let's say, moving workloads from one cache to the next cache.
So, but even if you have this, I can still have this pump some things into this, right?
Oh yeah, you can. So this guy interacts with the cache directly. This guy interacts with the cache directly.
Yeah. So I could mess with that.
You could, but the problem is you don't know what to do. You know what to access.
Well, but I know which workloads are in trouble.
You could, but you still don't know which cache lines to access. That's the problem.
Well, I could have a mirror image here.
Mm.
If I didn't know that, I wouldn't be able to.
What this guy knows is some CPU counters which tells how many cache misses occurred for each workload. That's what
yes.
this guy sees. It doesn't see which elements.
But
were
it knows. But it knows workloads, and it knows it has access to some performance measures.
It has,
and those measures are not measuring up,
mm-hmm.
and it wants to help a certain workload.
Right.
So,
the only way to help, the way you describe it, is to access specifically the elements that need to be in the cache.
But this
software layer has no idea which elements are in the cache at any given time.
But it knows the cache. It can easily monitor this.
It cannot. It's too much overhead. Even monitoring, like I said, even monitoring just the absolute number of misses that occurred within a period of time is a significant overhead. Because you had to think that this guy is running directly on the CPU, right? This workload is running directly on the CPU. The operating system only comes in once in a while to make scheduling decisions. And whatever it does at this level, it is supplemented by certain information that gets created inside the hardware that the operating system can look at when it itself gets to run on the CPU.
Well, for instance, then let me throw some other ideas. Let's say it decides that workload number 7 is in trouble and needs help. It goes, finds a few pages from workload 7 and just goes and makes dummy accesses to them.
But the problem is we don't know which pages
doesn't know,
because...
It doesn't know, but then anyway, it's a sort of a sampling scheme.
Yeah.
Something
so
that
even a page is huge, right? It's 4 kilobytes, and this cache line is 64 bytes. So your accesses that you're making are going to be much smaller than the total granularity of a page. And if you access an entire page...
No, I don't
page,
want to access a page. I meant a cache line.
There are probably, you know, in a workload would access probably hundreds of millions of cache lines. And this software layer doesn't know which cache lines are being accessed at any given time. The only thing it knows is that there are a certain number of misses.
Maybe you can think along these lines and see if this idea has some.
I mean, I'm not going to not think about it, but I'm just.
Yeah. Look, you know which pages of workload 7 got kicked. At least you could keep track.
Cache lines. Which cache lines?
Which cache lines?
Well,
so,
even that you don't know. Even that you don't know, because all the cache management is entirely hardware.
You know which ones are the misses, right?
You only know the miss rate. You only know the number of misses. You don't know which lines missed.
But once in a while, once I know that 7 is in trouble, I can go and look at some of the misses of this guy, right?
You don't know which lines missed, because all of the misses and loading of the cache lines are managed entirely in hardware. The operating system does not see any of that. Not true for a partitionable cache like an SSD where you can see everything.
But then you are talking about something that's a CPU cache.
It's a CPU cache. which is
we are talking about a cache hierarchy, this could, for other levels of the hierarchy, maybe the same thing. Useful, right?
The same thing for all the CPU or cache levels. For main memory, the operating system does get involved. For SSD caches, the operating system does get involved. But those are partitionable already.
But this guy could talk to the operating system and find a few pages.
That guy is the operating system.
This guy is the operating system.
Yeah, it's part of the operating system.
So it has access to operating system information.
Yes.
Which means it has access to the pages of this workload that were accessed in the recent past. So it could randomly sample a few of those and go and touch them.
It could, but it's very hard to get the right ones because each page is 4 kilobytes, and maybe the workload will be using
some part of
thousands
it.
Of pages at any given time, and then
a few lines from
very
each of these
few
pages
of, yeah,
are
lines
part in
are
the
actually in the cache. So it's you got to be really lucky to be touching those lines.
But you have memory addresses, no?
Memory addresses are not visible to the operating system. The only time the operating system will see anything is when there is a context switch and the operating system gets to run,
mm-hmm.
so it could potentially see what the current instruction is and which memory line it accessed, just for one instruction.
Okay.
Yeah, the operating system does not have that detailed knowledge, it cannot, it's just too much overhead. What the operating system largely does is it lets the processes use the resources as long as they're not creating problems, right? So there are two levels of execution. One is a user level execution and then one there are system level execution. So as long as the application is doing user level execution, the operating system does not even know or care about what the application is doing.
All right, so we'll maybe brainstorm about that some other time.
But I'm interested in the control knobs. I mean,
yeah. So that's what I wrote down. These are the things that I think will affect
wastage and
contention. And if you ever want to control them, these are the only things you have access to: the number of workload.
Yes.
The
specific workload.
Once you decide you want to reduce it, you want to know which one you want to throw out. Relative speeds. We talked about this by controlling
CPU.
The CPU allocation. And this is what I have so far.
That makes sense. Yeah, the first three do make sense.
Right. And I guess we talked about this. Really, it's just a mirror image of that, but with appropriate changes here.
Mm.
So
in terms of the, have you thought about where this would go into the proposal? Which parts this would? And whatever your...
This would affect each one of those parts. And there would
the
be sort of
four different components.
Part in each one of these. That's the way I see it.
Right. So the way I structured the proposal right now, I'm not saying
I have
that
to go back and look at it. And
yeah, that is that there is a foundational component.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so this could all be there, or it could be strewn into each of those pieces. I haven't really thought about it. That's fine. It doesn't bother me when you're there.
Right. I know you got to go. I don't know if you wanted to talk about something else.
I have some time, yeah. I have
okay.
15 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, I think the questions that I was talking about are more high level than probably what you're looking at. You're looking at more maybe the next level of detail in each of those questions. And so once you start answering the high-level questions, there are other questions that emerge, right? And they are more specific and more smaller in terms of their goal. So perhaps that's what you've been... So for instance, and let's pick any one of them. Say for the non-partitionable cache, we want to address the problem of... sizing the cache for a set of workloads. Right?
Okay, yeah, that's sort of the reverse problem of what I've been thinking.
Or what is the other, what is the reverse side?
Reverse side meaning here I was assuming that the size is fixed.
Even that is a valid problem.
And you want to know how many workloads can I handle, what should be their characteristics, or a more adaptive question saying, okay, currently this is these are the ones that are there, here are the performance metrics, what do you want to do? Do you want to reduce the number of workloads or increase? Do you want to, which one do you want to remove or which one do you want to add? That sort of question.
Right.
Or how do you want to regulate their speech so that the interaction is better? So that's for a fixed, given fixed size of cache. And I think that that's what seems to make sense, because in a real system, I assume that that would be given to you.
Yeah, that's certainly a realistic formulation.
The other question is, you're saying if
you have a set of workloads, how do you size the cache?
So I should write that down. Sounds reasonable,
The other fundamental question, for instance, one further level of detail is, what are the properties of the workload that you need to know that completely describes the workload and its effect on other workloads?
Yeah.
Right?
Hi, Sweetie. So, 7:10, I'll be there, Kana. 7:05. I'm here in main campus. Sure, yeah. Let's meet there at 7:10. Yes. Bye.
Yeah, so what I was saying is that the...
So what workload parameters?
Yeah, how do you model a workload so that you can sufficiently describe its cache requirement as well as its impact on other workloads' cache requirements? And we talked about things like reuse rate and flood rate and the ERSS tree, like the working set size.
So that's where part of the problem is, because flood rate, reuse rate is only relevant when others are there. It's not relevant. It's not a characteristic of the workload. It's a characteristic of the profile.
Yes, that's right.
So workload profile then.
Yeah, the question was what properties of the workload sufficiently describe or are sufficient to understand the workload's cache requirements and the impact of that workload on other workloads' cache requirements.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that would be sort of the next level of detail.
Sure.
One of the questions along.
Yeah.
Okay, so once we understand that, then what was the higher level question we are trying to answer is in the case of non-partitionable workload, how do you provision caches? That's what we are trying to understand. That's sort of the higher level question. Okay, then the next question would be, how do we model the impact of a workload A on the cache requirement of workload B?
Right. That's sort of there.
And then the next question would be...
That's really contention and wastage.
Contention and wastage. And then the third question is, what is the cumulative cache requirements of a set of workloads so that all the workload working sets are cache resident at any given time?
I don't think I understood that.
Right, maybe this is the higher level question in more specific terms, which is, what is the amount of cache you need to provision so that all the workload working sets are cache resident at any given time? So that is so the cache requirement would be working set space plus the space of wastage, so that you know, despite the wastage, all the working sets are cache resident.
Yeah. So really, you're saying how to account for wastage in accommodating.
Yeah. What is the? What I want to say is, what is the cumulative effect of a set of workloads on the additional cache space required to ensure that the workload's working set is cache resident? So you say have a set of workloads that
impact
on.
How do we ensure that everything stays in this flat region?
I was sort of breaking that up. I don't know if it makes sense to make it break up at that granularity, but to say something like, given a set of workloads, what is the impact of the set of workloads? How much cache do you need to provision so that a specific workload's working set is always cache resident despite the presence of a set of contending workloads? And given the properties of all of these workloads?
They're all related, because once you model this wastage, you've answered that question, in my opinion, right?
Yeah. So yeah, these are all, some of them may be redundant questions, but
they go to show how we understand this problem and all the related questions. Yeah, okay.
Right, so this is under the high-level umbrella of provisioning caches for a non-partitionable cache. Provisioning for a non-partitionable cache.
Yeah.
And given a set of workloads. The other, the other way of looking at the same problem is what you were talking about earlier, given a fixed size cache.
Right.
How do I map a set of workloads so that cache wastage is minimized?
Right.
How do I group workloads that minimize cache wastage? So for instance, one idea here is that workloads with similar reuse rates are grouped together so that one workload doesn't significantly.
Yeah, that's right. But again, once we understand wastage and the interaction, hopefully this is one of the first things that I would probably approach, saying typically if you think about systems that have two different kinds of resources, let's say CPU and memory,
right,
what you would do is to combine things where one needs a lot of CPU and less memory, and one that requires a lot of memory and little CPU. You wouldn't go and put all the CPU heavy workloads on one machine. So similar things have to happen here, where you have different coordinate axes to satisfy. How do you combine them so that they behave in some uniform fashion?
Yeah, here it's interesting, and I don't know if this makes sense or not. I've just been thinking that wastage is caused because one workload's set of low elements or low importance elements takes out another workload's elements that are more important for the performance of that workload. And that's because this one workload elements that are being reused faster than even the more important elements of the other workload. So the conventional wisdom is that you map low requirement workloads with high requirement workloads so that
you're thinking that maybe interactions will actually make it worse.
That's what I'm trying to say. Maybe it makes sense to achieve better partitioning that you map
possible in this case,
similar workloads together in the same cache, because then the reuse rates being similar, more competitive and cause
and
very good partitioning of the cache.
And do a balance that's better.
Yeah.
That's possible. It may also be possible that even though caches are not partitionable, maybe they can be crudely partitioned, like in the case of instruction cache and data cache. So that's
by
kind of crude,
by equalizing
by,
reuse rates.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
That may be not a bad suggestion, right?
Mm.
Or you could say if you have access to two different caches, maybe one is just exclusively used for this kind of workload and one for this kind of workloads.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking more in terms of, okay, if you have similar MRCs, put them on the same cache, right? Because then they will automatically find the right balance without, I mean, the analogy here is that you pit heavyweight boxers against other heavyweight boxers.
I understand. So,
so that there is balance.
This is somewhat game theoretical.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, Mario would probably get excited with this.
Mm. But in this case, it actually, I think it does make...
To you, that's what seems more intuitive.
Right. So for instance, I mean, let's say I have four workloads. They all have the same working set size. Two of those guys reuse their working sets much less frequently than the other two guys. Now, you might naturally think, let me pair, two guys which are different, because then maybe they're complementing the resource utilization of the cache. But it would turn out that even the elements of the workload that are not part of the working set, but just because they're accessed more frequently, would push out important elements of another workload.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
Right. So that's sort of the idea here, but I need to think about it more.
But then, I mean, if you have a system, you have a system. You can't really, you don't have a choice sometimes. You do have to service them.
You do have to service them, but if you have two caches,
yeah,
then you could
then you could
map the workloads in a much better way than to map them arbitrarily. Or to map them saying, okay, I'm going to put complementary workloads together, which may not be the right thing to do in this, given the wastage model.
Absolutely, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. In fact, many of Ricardo's basic example has the same flavor, where one is somewhat lazy, and even though it wants to access the same page, it's somewhat lazy and doesn't do it that frequently. The other guy is pretty aggressive.
Exactly.
And just needs crap. It doesn't need it again.
So in some sense, if I had to put it in a very sort of crude way, I would say put similar workloads together, and that's basically your
solution. So maybe I'll try to use that example and put it in so that some of these examples could be discussed.
Yeah.
So it's all right with you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'll scavenge from that paper. And
oh, yeah, or Ricardo's thesis too.
That's what I meant,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, if you want some of the figures that he did, I can also give you an electronic copy of the, I'll ask for the sources of his dissertation.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll probably need to use it myself, so yeah, I'll ask for that.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we can meet later this week, like Friday or something, if you're here.
Yeah, I'm going to be here every day of this week because I have a Monday fast deadline.
Paper deadline, and then I have to say that with Mario has some really nice results on the
packing
paper. Yeah. So after we talked to you guys, so we did this repacking, right? When things dynamically change, how do you move things around so that it's repacked nicely? And there was this strange dichotomy where things that pack somewhat loosely have to repack less, whereas things that pack very nicely and tightly and use less pins have to repack a lot, right? And I don't know if you remember, there was this, one was here in the two axes.
Oh, yeah.
So there was this number of bins versus amount of data movement. If you do this, there was one thing that was here and one thing that was here. And So we were thinking, how can we find something in between? Because you guys also pointed out that it's not clear this is better or this is better, because it really depends on the relative cost of these two things. So we came up with a way to populate this area and have a nice parameter that that can fit along this.
Okay, what is that parameter?
So in bin packing, if you look at next fit, all it does is it looks at the current bin. If it can put it there, it'll put it. Otherwise, it opens a new bin, and that becomes its current bin. If you look at first fit, what it does is it always starts from the first and says, okay, can I put it here? Can I put it here? Can I put it here? And then it says, okay, I can put it here. Let me put it here. That's first fit. So it looks at everything. Next fit only looks at the last one. So we said, let's use K, where we allow it to look at K bins. And so it turns out that it gives you a nice, nice parameter that you can easily control. So it tells you how loosely you want to pack.
I see.
And gives you a nice control over things. The results are definitely getting much more interesting than before, much more sophisticated. So the thing we are towards this weekend. So maybe you can set aside 2 hours to read the paper at some point.
This week.
It won't be this week. It'll be next week.
Oh, next week.
Due next Thursday. This week is my theory paper. It's another paper.
Oh, next Thursday is doable, because Monday I'll be done with my past papers. And then I have Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah, we won't have it before Tuesday. That's my guess.
Okay, yeah, Wednesday I can certainly look at it. No problem. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
So it looks...
Did Mario figure out how to fix the figures?
I don't know if he did.
Yeah, I know. The figures look really bad.
I told him to go talk to
go talk to any other guys.
Yeah, so Daniel should be able to help him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There are lots of templates which we can give Mario. He just needs to use those templates, and that's it.
Yeah,
I mean, he needs to use GNUplot, basically.
No, that's